SBS Radio.
It's worth remembering that for most of the history of Anglo-Australia, Aboriginal people had no rights at all. It had only been since World War II and, in the case of native title, since 1992 that there's been any formal recognition by the Australian legal system of Aboriginal people's rights to land. We start with a cultural problem, I think, and that is that many people in positions of power, anyone really who's over 50 years old, can remember a time when Aboriginal people had no rights to land, except in places like the Northern Territory or under state land rights acts. So we start from a position where it's difficult to... I mean, there are still many people in positions of power who either don't agree with the Mabo decision that gave people, that recognised Aboriginal people's rights, or who simply just don't get that Aboriginal people do have these rights and therefore should be respected as property holders or, the holders of the rights. That's the initial problem we have. It's an attitudinal or cultural problem in many parts of Australia. Aboriginal people are still seen by many in power as, a social problem rather than a national asset, people that we should be proud of and part of this extraordinary story of Australia.
It's really, because you just touched Mabo Day, was a few weeks ago. We were celebrating, commemorating the huge achievement that the great Eddie Kweki Mabo achieved by introducing, abolishing the concept of terra nullius, and yet... Yeah, the rights were just, it seems symbolic, not all the rights have been completely attained.
In the native title context, important to understand the High Court's judgment in 1992 in Eddie Mabo's case. Essentially, in order for native title to be recognised, Aboriginal people concerned need to be able to demonstrate to the court that they still have a connection to country through observance of their traditional laws and customs. Now, for people in some parts of Australia, that's, it's easy enough for them to do. It's a complex process, but they can certainly do it confidently. There are other parts of Australia where the impacts of colonisation have been so great that, people have, through no fault of their own, lost the laws and customs that used to bind them together as a group, which defined their relationship with the land. That doesn't mean they don't have a relationship with the land. It just means that they don't pass a white Anglo legal test.
No, I understand fully, because if you consider communities that were displaced or whose land has been encroached on and they've been prevented from exercising that right in the Anglo-Western sense, then they would lose it according to that Anglo-Western view of things. Now, when we come back to these recent destructions and projected destructions, talking specifically about the Gomeroi sites, what happened in a few weeks? Last year was a court case that in which the government argued that economic rights precede cultural and spiritual connection to country.
What we had there was a decision by the Commonwealth Minister, Susan Lee, who was to make a decision under the relevant legislation whether or not these Aboriginal sites should be protected. And yes, you're quite right. She found that, I think, if I remember the words rightly, that the economic benefits of the project as outlined by the mining company Shenhua, and those economic benefits themselves are in dispute, those benefits outweigh, quote, the immeasurable value of the cultural heritage concern. We have a problem in Australia, and it's not limited to the Gomeroi. It's popped up again in public attention in Western Australia, in the case of Rio Tinto and the Juukan Gorge. Let's be honest, my understanding is that there have been hundreds of ministerial consents given to destroy cultural heritage in Western Australia alone over the past 10 years. You know, we have lovely legislation in place that's meant to protect, or it's said to protect, cultural heritage. But in fact, just about all of that legislation leads to a point where if a mining company makes an application to a minister or to a commission, a decision maker, and is able to convince that decision maker that the mine is in the national interest or the that it's of great economic benefit, it's almost certain that the minister or the decision maker will find in favour of the miner and permit that cultural heritage to be destroyed or damaged or interfered with.
And this brings into context something that's proclaimed by organizations all over the world, the concept of corporate social responsibility. Because when they do their applications, I see brochures every day, and these brochures proclaim to be socially and culturally responsible. And yet, in practice, we realize that there's a gap between what's proclaimed and what's done.
There certainly is. But look, I would go further and say that, despite the sort of claims that are made by conservative groups like the Institute of Public Affairs that says there's too much red tape, too much green tape, in fact, when it comes to Indigenous cultural heritage, not only is there little regulation, but it is really largely a question of self-regulation by the industry, by the mining industry. The miners, generally speaking, get what they want because governments and political parties, all the major political parties, are pretty much captured by mining interests in the sense that, either they think that we need the royalties or, in some cases, I'm sure there's even brazen corruption. The mining industry is very good at controlling politics so far as it concerns mining regulation.
Yeah, so they control the narrative.
Well, they control the politicians. Yeah. This brings into consideration issues like, the identity of Rio Tinto particularly.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why so many of us are appalled and saddened by what has occurred on the PKK people's country in Western Australia is that in a context where the mining industry largely self-regulates, the government really doesn't get in their way in a big way. It's really up to the miners to show self-discipline and to commit themselves to higher standards than the local laws would allow them to get away with. I've worked on both sides of the table. I've worked for Aboriginal groups in negotiations against Rio Tinto. I've consulted to Rio Tinto overseas in various countries, and I'm very proud of the work that I've done with that company in the past, because they have been, since the mid-1990s and until about 2017-18, real industry leaders. Their example, they don't always get it right, but they have had a real commitment to respecting Indigenous Australians and their rights, to doing their best to find ways to maximise benefits for Indigenous groups and minimise impacts in mining. Now, there are many exceptions to that, I'm sure, but overall, and compared to the rest of the mining industry, they stood out as, exhibiting some of the best practice in the Australian industry. Yeah. Now, the tragedy is that watching what has happened to Rio Tinto since the beginning of the term of its current CEO, Jean-Sébastien Jacques, it's lost its way. It doesn't have that leadership anymore. And, this Juukan Gorge incident is probably not an exception. It is probably likely to continue to occur so long as they don't give full attention to the systems that they need and the leadership they need to be as good as they can be in relation to Aboriginal Australians and their interests.
Yeah, and this joins exactly what Professor Glyn Cochran, who was a top advisor to Rio Tinto, actually said this morning on the ABC. He said that actually the company is now focused on what it can get away with, and no longer the social corporate responsibility is just out the bin.
I agree. I've heard Professor Cochran's interview.
Yeah.
I agree entirely with what he has to say, and I would encourage you to repeat that interview as often as you can, because he has gone to the very heart of how a company that really led the Australian industry in good practice in these matters has really, gone to the bottom of the pack in a very short space of time due to lack of leadership and wrong systems.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.